What's up, everybody? It's Keith from the Stream Team, and with me, as usual, Chris Lowry and Cole Miller. And today we have reached the finale so far. We haven't gotten a Dead Reckoning yet, obviously, because they haven't come out yet. But we've reached the end of the line as we have it so far. We're at Mission Impossible Fallout 2018, man. This movie's already been out almost 5 years.
Keep thinking 17. Yeah. God, why do I always think 17?
I don't get it, but we're here because time isn't real. Anyway, 2018, Christopher McQuarrie movie, runtime of 2.5 hours, and this one doesn't feel that. I'd forgotten how long it was, and I guess just because I just remember it being such a good movie and so captivating that I didn't feel like it was that long of a runtime when it came to the movie. And even doing the research again, I was like, that can't be right. And well, I mean, it was, but it just didn't feel like it was right.
Yeah, it doesn't play long
at all. It doesn't play long. It doesn't bog down. There's not a point. Honestly, the scene that is the set piece that is the longest is whenever we get to Kashmir at the end, and then we get the
that's what
it
I was
all
gonna
unfolds
say.
There.
That is a long sequence.
It is. Yeah. It is. There's,
but it's like you gotta say,
in
like,
a good
it
way.
Doesn't
in a good
bog
way.
Down.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But you
there's just a
like,
lot
man,
going on.
Sure have been here for a while.
It's just a really dense snack. It's just like, I don't know if you've ever eaten a Grab the Gold bar, but it's a really small protein bar, but it's packed with oats and chocolate, and it's just really filling for it to be, like, for that to be, and I actually meant to time that 15-minute stretch from whenever the bomb did start to whenever we got there at the end, because I always love whenever it's, like, 15 minutes, but then we get, like, 40 minutes of runtime in the actual movie.
Oh, yeah.
But, that was an action-packed 15 minutes, I will say that. Obviously, it started before that countdown was when we get Julia and her husband and all that. But we'll get to that. So, Rotten Tomato score, 97-88. 88 is fantastic. It is still low to me. I don't know what the audience was looking for. Those 12% of people were just like, I didn't. Anyway, we've done this before.
Maybe it feels long to some people. I could see that. Maybe like, because it doesn't bother us, but I imagine like I could see someone who is a, I don't want to say a more traditional movie watch, because it's not like long movies are a new thing, but someone who is a fan of maybe some shorter movies, maybe feeling like the pacing gets away. There is like one moment where it feels like the pacing is about to get away from him, when you're like, Christopher McQuarrie, you might lose this one, but then it's like, the scene is real, like that whole section is reeled in. So, but maybe to some people, maybe at that point, they do kind of feel like he lost and it seems a little long to people. Other than that, I don't know, because it's just like, it has all the best parts of the other ones. It's got the cool stunt. It's got some of my favorite characters. I mean, all of these always have great characters, but it's like this one has maybe the best, most consistent performance, like across the board. So I'm like you, like, what do those 12% of people, what are they not digging? What more do you
want? I don't
want
know
from
what
this
could
movie?
Be what more could be added. Like there's no additional seasoning added to me. It is a perfectly seasoned dish, and we're good there. Like it's just really odd. But anyway, we're not going to dive too deep into that, because 88 still is a fantastic score. But I think that
on the
audience side, it should have maybe not matched the critics side, but been within, to me, at least 3 points of the critics. But anyway, it's still fine. It's a fantastic movie. The budget earnings we've gone over before, but I will reiterate one more time. $178 million budget. This movie did $791 million.
Hell yeah.
That'll get
some people two-parters. I don't know if it's everybody, but definitely Tom Cruise will get two more parts with this. But fantastic cast. What I did like, I liked a lot of things about this movie. What I really liked about it was the slow burn that we got with Henry Cavill's character, August Walker, because we didn't get his reveal until, I noted this, we got his reveal at 1 hour and 26 minutes into the movie, that he was actually on the wrong side of the coin. Which, for the most part, I mean, obviously there's a lot of people at this point in the IMF world and watching a bunch of Mission Impossible movies. Anybody who is added to the movie, I don't trust. So when it comes to a new character coming in, I'm just like, oh, they weren't, they're not part of the originals. Okay, I don't trust them yet until
they're the new secretary who's gonna die.
Correct. Right. Yeah. Somebody who's not gonna be around long.
It's one of those.
That's
two
the worst job on earth.
Seriously.
How many fucking secretaries have you been through? Right. Like Fishburne. Like fuck, man.
You take that job, it's over for you. Somehow, some way, you're done.
Which is so weird, though, because it seems like a cushy office job, right? Like, are the secretary, are they in the field like that? I mean, I know we got Hundley out in the field.
But, they show up quite a bit.
Right. For no reason whatsoever. Like,
killed. Yeah.
He said, Benji can do this shit. Fuck it, soaking up.
Yeah, on. Seriously, though. Just doesn't make much sense.
If Benji could be on the field, I think all of us could be in the field. Now I have full confidence. Seeing him in like the last couple movies, I'm like, yeah, I think the three of us could do that.
We also almost saw Benji asphyxiate at the end of the movie. He almost got he almost died. But
I don't like that part.
That's really, really.
That was a little intense.
Very much so. Yeah. But yeah, incredible cast. I mean, everybody. We have all of the same players for the most part. We get Becca Ferguson back in it. Sean Harris as Solomon Lane. Sean Harris as Solomon Lane was an incredible casting in my opinion, and I know that we had him before, but. He's just the kind of villain that makes sense in these movies. And to me, it started with Philip Seymour Hoffman and have the villain that, while he wasn't physically intimidating, he was just so, his demeanor was so calm that I was just like, I am scared to death of this guy. Like, it just, I mean, he never raises his voice. He never gets fast in his reactions to much of anything. I mean, he's always ahead of the game. But anyway, we'll talk more about him. We got Angela Bassett inserted to this. We've got Vanessa Kirby. We've got Alec Baldwin. I mean, all these people are added to this movie. And so then it gives us a bunch of people not to trust. And when we talk about a plot moving along and having a movie like this, Chris, where it's just like, who is the person we don't trust? And it feels like it's going to be Baldwin just because of his demeanor and the kind of person that we think he's going to be, but end up he actually is on the good side of things. Having all these people inserted and having the audience needing to think and try to figure out, okay, who's the person I don't need to trust, or what of this should I actually believe? How awesome is that in regards to this movie and this series?
It's awesome. And I think the best part about this is, like, you get a lot of people along the way who you think, oh, okay, this is the tippy top. This is the person that I need to be the most mm-hmm. worried about. And then 20 minutes later, someone else comes in, like, okay, I got it stamped down. Now it's them and they're in control of this person. And 20 minutes later, it's like, actually, there's this person above them. So it's like, it does kind of work with the way that this movie, like, once things get out of hand for him, and once they lose a plutonium, like, it all just completely spirals out of control for him, and things just keep getting thrown at them. And it's like I said about some of the other ones, these do a great job of keeping you kind of entertained and keeping you in on the mystery of these movies. So, you know, everything is moving so fast, and we just keep getting introduced to these new players who are these, like, extremely charismatic, God, and awesome characters, but it's just like, you know, you can't trust them. Like, you see Walker and you see Angela Bassett's character for the first time. Like, okay, they're CIA, but, you know, they certainly seem like they don't trust Hunt. So it's like, are they going to turn? And then you get the sense that, oh, okay, maybe not. So then you get the John Lark character, and mm-hmm. then he's done. Then Ilsa shows up, and you're like, well, you know, you're just like Hunt. You're, you know, like Hunt and the team. You're wondering what she's doing there. And then you get Vanessa Kirby's character, and you're curious about her. Then you get her brother, and it's just like, you just keep going and going and going. You're like, who do I need to be the most worried about? And it ends up like it's this long chain of, you know, it's a mix of people that are on their side for, you know, their own personal gains, people on their side because they're working with someone else, they're working for someone else. And like, it really does keep you entertained the whole time. Like, there's never a moment in this movie where you're kind of out of, you know, you may not have the big action set piece, but you're still, you know, you're kind of watching the cat and mouse game. And so it really is like an awesome addition to this. I don't know if any of the other ones do that in the same way, where they just like they certainly keep bringing you scenes that have you on edge, but I don't know if they just keep introducing character after character after character that makes you kind of where I think the other ones, like, they have like the two or three people already in the movie mm-hmm. from the jump, and you know, you're bouncing around, you know, is Lawrence Fishburne the bad guy, is it Billy Crudup for some reason, like who should I be the most worried about, right. And you know, and you see them from the jump. But this one, it's just like every 20 minutes we'll put another good looking face in front of you and make you nervous. And I think that's really, really fun.
No, it's great. And like you said, if people just keep showing up, and it's just like, yep, add them to the list of people I don't trust. Because obviously when we get to the White Widow portion of this, there's nobody around that particular organization that I trusted. I mean, her brother just seemed like he's like, let's just kill. Like Ethan, whenever he was playing that scenario.
He's funny to me, I will say.
Kill everybody there.
Yeah, he seems like the guy who's like trying to be the big, like, he seemed like Colt, he seemed like just like a doofus, but he's trying to play hard and be the big boss. And it's just like, you couldn't orchestrate a crime of like stealing cereal out of a bowl. I don't think I got something. Right. I'm not super worried about you. Like, just like how goofy he looks and the way he acts, like how he's always like standing in the back with his legs kind of spread and his arms crossed. And it's like, he's playing the tough guy. And like, they've got a lot of men, they've got a lot of money, so he feels like he's Tony Soprano, but he probably could make it, you know, a full day without his favorite pair of socks, which I don't think any of us could, but
I love socks.
I do too.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't blame him. He's just like us. Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that, but
except we don't want to kill everybody whenever we're trying to, like, his plan was legitimately just to shoot everybody on the scene and just get
cops and everything.
He said no witnesses. Everybody. Brother, that has never worked. The no witness never, thing has, historically speaking, it does not work.
Yeah, especially in a city like Paris.
Right.
Yeah.
Paris!
He's legitimately just wanted to dead the entire
scene. A lot of people.
A whole lot of people.
Yeah.
Going to turn into the half original Terminator where somebody just trying to eat a salad for lunch just get oozied for no particular reason.
just because they
decided to go to a different cafe that day for lunch. But yeah, it was like we opened the movie immediately and we're right into the thick of it. Like the Plutonium meeting and we have the apostles, they ambush Hunt and Benji and Luther and
Wolf Blitzer.
Listen. Like
the wolf.
Like talk about a Mr. Mustang. Like Wolf Blitzer comes in.
Did we get it?
Man.
And yeah, yes, it is Benji, but like it's Wolf Blitzer, obviously, and we have him come in.
Yeah, like it was still
him,
right?
We get the gag from the second Mission Impossible Cola. I actually was going to throw that to you. Like, how cool is it that we get kind of that throwback, which is weird. It almost feels like a Bond-ish type homage, like going back, you know, when we get an Aston Martin in a newer movie or something like that, where we have a gag, a gag that we haven't seen in several movies that they used in the second whenever they set up John C. McCloy, that was his name, the CEO of the pharmaceutical CEO, set him up at what he thought was a hospital, and we end up getting the whole fake deal. But how cool was that scene in regards to the plot and getting the information that they needed at that point?
Man, that scene was super cool, and it was also, like, harrowing to think about, like, him getting his way.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It was, like, because they didn't really give us any inside information. Like, we have to see it real time, like everybody. But, like, of course, that didn't happen, but the way he just kind of got bamboozled, and he was supposed to be this, like, smart, intelligent guy who had just hadn't gotten beat, like, twice, mm-hmm. right? And that was super cool. I like the way the scene was set up. I like that Wolf was in it. Like, all of that was just really cool. And it felt viable.
Very
right?
much
like
so.
If any other news anchor, like, that isn't a real person, you probably would have sniffed that one out immediately. But because it was such a real figure, like Wolf, like, you were just like, oh, I see this guy all the time. He's reading the news. My brain defaults to, oh, this guy isn't in a mask. Like, this is really happening.
Right, and the only reason why, and watch it, as going back to the first time I watched it, the only reason why I thought that was a setup for Delbrook was because Ethan acted uncharacteristically emotional in that scene where he was trying to get to Delbrook after he was like, you know, he had told him what he was he was excited about the nukes going off and all the other stuff, and I was like, normally even if he is upset, he's still collected, and so I was like, that seems like we're in something different. But I mean, the way like that happening right after the plutonium was stolen and all that, I was like, okay, so something did happen. But obviously, we get the setup, and Benji comes in. He takes his mask off, and we get the manifesto, and all those other things have been revealed. So, it was a case there where that was the gag, and I actually really liked it because it wasn't used too much. And I know we gotten the mask throughout the course of the series, but that particular setup was cool to see again because we hadn't seen it since the second, and I enjoyed having it come back. But we get at this point where now we have what Ethan needs to do. We have him on the runway, and he's getting briefed by Hunley and. All right, here's where you're going, and this is the play, and this is what you need to do. And then we have the CIA pull up, and Hunley and Sloan have their pissing contest on the runway, which I always enjoy. I don't know. Yes. It's so cheesy, man, but they, you know, they're both talking about jurisdiction, and you're not going. Like, yeah. This is a CIA plane, so you're not going to go. And, like, all the – dude, like, feed – I want all of that.
And they're both, like, really
the
good.
The president
too, so, like, it makes it even yeah. Which I got – which is like, and he agrees with me.
I love, dude, I love
scene.
All that. Like, or wherever, like, you know, a character like Sona, I know she didn't do it in that one, but she's like, okay, well, you know, I got clearance from the president. If you want to talk to him, you can. And she'll, like, hold up his phone, you know, like, hold up her phone, you know, like, with the president's number is, like, dialed already. I always love stuff like that. But we get Walker, you know, Henry Cavill's character, August Walker, we get him as a
6-foot mustache.
Like, he's ready to roll, man. He shows up and he casts a shadow on the entire scene because he's blocking out the sun because he's as wide as ever. And Honestly, immediately, just because I'm always skeptical with new characters, but this is somebody I don't trust. Even though he is working for another American agency, this is a guy. You
can't trust a mustache like that.
Not
man.
Like that, no. It's so extremely intentional, and we just know what the deal is. But he comes in, and we have our play. We have them going. They're going to Paris. They're going to get the Halo jump. They have to figure out what they need to do. The Halo jump actually felt a lot like Star Trek 2, whenever we had, you know, Chris Pine, of course, they have Jim Kirk and Benedict Arnold with their Halo jump. And it was, of course, it was like they have the guidance on their screen as well. But anyway, Chris talking about, you know, getting August Walker introduced, and he doesn't have a ton of lines on the runway, but we get his character. We already know that he's a rogue guy, and, you know, he's going to be a wild card, and he's just like, you know, Ethan's trying to brief him on the plane, and he just like, let's just, you know, he just jumps up. He unhooks Ethan's oxygen, and he just jumps off, and he's out. You know, he's just out of there. Like, talk about the insertion of him and just the uneasiness that we get around his character as he's supposed to be working with the IMF along this mission.
I got stuff to say about him, so I'll keep it short. But I think one of the coolest parts about him is that, like, for starters, we've talked the last couple of weeks about how these villains are these, like, unsuspecting, like, they're not the biggest, broadest, strongest-looking guys. Like, these guys have this, like, more dynamic presence with their voice and how menacing they can be. And, like, and now we get, like, the biggest person that's ever been in the year. Let's get the biggest guy on Earth and put him in this movie. And it's like you're suspicious of him right out the gate, but like you almost do get lulled into just like seeing him as part of the team. And it's just like, yeah, man, of course. It's like 20 years ago when Henry Cavill signs on, you immediately know like, oh, this is the bad guy. But because of the way these movies have played, you're like, no, the bad guy is going to be someone who can do like 11 push-ups max. Like it's not going to be Superman. It's not going to be the biggest motherfucker in Hollywood.
Yeah, like, put a bad guy in that's got muscle. Yeah,
it's like you're not expected that at this point. But I think like the maybe one of the funniest parts about him, one part that I always think about, like he's kind of just this complete and total antithesis of like the IMF and Ethan as a whole. Like he's almost this like weird stand-in character. He has like so many lines where you're just like, where you can just, you know, he's not from their world. You know, like he makes fun of so many things, like when he's talking about the mask and he's like, people really fall for this shit, or when he's reading the line back, he's like, your mission should you choose to accept, that is the thing, isn't it? It's just like he's here to like shit on every part of IMF, and it's funny, like he ends up being this like stand-in because we watch him so much and we love him that, you know, we're just kind of settled. Like as serious as these are, there's so much silliness in a way going on, and we just lean into it. And it's like you have this character who is just this, like, he almost feels like he's from a different franchise. Like, he feels so hyper serious. Like, he would be, you know, even more, I guess, like, Man from U.N.C.L.E. is a silly movie as well, but, like, he just feels like he should be, like, a Bond character with how, like, straight he's playing it. And, like, every time there's the IMF-ness of it all, he's just like, what the fuck are we what's going like, on, you know? is this? Like, how does any of this work for you guys? And so he's just, again, they picked just a great person to play him. And it is a really good character. Like, I know that this is probably, like, a big, you know, it hasn't all gone great for Henry Cavill since then, you know, due to a lot of things. But, like, this had to have been one of those characters, along with, like, the Man from U.N.C.L.E. and some other things that you look at and you're like, oh, this guy can do something. Like, he's not just the good-looking muscle guy who you hope can, you know, fumble his way through the script and be fine. It's like, he can, you know, he can play across the board and do a lot of things. And so he's a really interesting character. Like I said, I love that he just serves as this antithesis to IMF. And it's like, you see all that and you should already know that he is the villain. But, like, the reveal, I think, like, how far into being a villain he is what also hits you. Like, you don't expect him to be an apostle, you know what I mean? So it's just...
Yeah.
Again, I hope I didn't go too long because I really, really do love this character, and I love so much of what they did with him. But yeah, like, he's awesome. Like, what a perfect character to introduce, and what just a great guy to do. We've talked about it before. Ethan kind of reaches this height to where you have to go get this guy to come in and, like, be the foil, right? Like, Ethan Hunt is almost feeling, like, kind of supernatural in a way that it's just, like, we have to take a big swing to get a very compelling guy to, you know, stand across from him, even when we thought they're on the same team, as a guy who just had, like, the differing opinion. Like, you had to bring in the guy to maybe, ground or kind of level out Ethan Hunt. And, you know, this is a great way to do it. You know, when they're on the team, when it was a twist that he was a villain, every way that they use Walker in this film was just phenomenal.
It is. And I agree.
And he got struck by lightning.
Which I was about to, I was about to get that.
Fucked up by lightning.
Doing the halo jump.
Tough, man.
But
did you guys jump when you saw that? When I was in the theater, saw that, I fucking jumped. I won't hold you.
Every time I forget that it's going to happen.
You try to time it up and it still catches you off guard?
Yep.
No, dude, it's legitimately, though, it's pretty startling because it's like, yeah, it is that, you know, we saw that they jumped in out of, you know, jumped in, and we saw the storm whenever that back gate opened, but it's at the same time, we might be expecting something else, maybe a bird strike or something like that. So then whenever it does happen, it is startling. But Chris, I think you're exactly right whenever it comes to inserting a villain like this, because for the most part, we got a bunch of cerebral villains throughout the course of these. None really were physically imposing. Nobody that we felt like would go toe-to-toe with Ethan, and I think at this point we got somebody who we feel like could potentially mentally and physically outmatch Ethan as well. And so we do get just like this completely out of left field kind of character. But again, we didn't get that reveal until
they didn't even do the thing where they try to make Tom Cruise look the same height as him consistently, because just like we can't even sell this one. Sorry, good guy.
We got some Rocky versus Drago shit right there, dude. Like, we legitimately need to see the height discrepancy so we can understand what was going on with that. But we did get a little bit of an Easter egg with that, and I think this movie did a really good job of planting the seed with a couple different things, lines here and there. And I'm sure there's some things that I did overlook too. But whenever they're on the plane, Ethan and August, and he said, "You're the reason why we don't have a living witness to ID Lark or any of the apostles." It's like, well, yeah, because he is an apostle, and he doesn't want to leave any sins. And so, something, you know, hearing a line like that early on, I'm like, oh shit, dude, like, yeah, that's something's amiss. But at the same time, we go so long into the movie before we really get the grand reveal that it's just like, oh, well, it's just, we know that this guy is just a loose cannon, and so he's just shooting people before he.
Yeah, I thought he was just a badass. Correct.
He's just shooting people. It's not necessarily like he's trying to cover tracks or make sure that no apostles of Lark are actually ID'd. He's just shooting people and asking questions later. But from a technical standpoint, how awesome was that halo jump scene?
Oh, fuck, dude. Yeah, you knew that shit was just going to slap. And then, like, not only did they just do a halo jump, which other movies have done, Bond movies have done them, and they're cool as fuck, because, of course, like, any skydiving footage is going to look amazing, great, right? But the cool thing about this one is they add that extra element of Henry Cavill getting struck by lightning and Tom Cruise, like, actually doing a stunt where he tries to save somebody else's life during an actual halo jump, right? And so we get all of this footage and all of these, like, very good shots of that scene happening, right? And, like, one of the cool things, we were actually talking about this before you got on, Chris, I feel like this is some of the best camera work of all the series.
It was awesome.
Just because of the way that they make a lot of these shots look is just unbelievable. And the halo jump, like, as much as I'm sure there was some, you know, VFX additions to make things, you know, look a little bit better, it felt like we were falling out of an airplane, right? And, yeah, and like, I know that was 100% by design, and the camera may itself actually have just been falling by, you know, I mean, that's what it felt like.
But no, operator just threw that shit out.
Yeah, they're just like, fuck it, this will be realistic as shit.
Get Deakins,
you know,
in there.
And
someone will catch it down there.
Yeah, Roger Deakins is just like, somewhere. He's got a backpack and a steady
cam. He just threw it down.
He's like, I got
he just tied a camera to a bag of marbles, and he's like, here's your shot.
Yeah. Yep, I got this. But yeah, I mean, I one of my favorite scenes in the movie for sure, because it's like, it's actually not a super complex stunt outside of, like, of course, saving somebody's life would be very difficult. But a lot of the times they just keep upping and upping and upping themselves in this movie. And one of my favorite scenes is one of those. But this one does feel a little bit like stripped down to just be really, really cool shit. And I think they were aware that if they made it any more badass, it would be a hard act to follow, you know? So they gave you, like, this kind of abridged version of it, but it's super, super cool.
Right. Well, and which one did you talk about where it's, like, the best scene of the movie happened early on? I couldn't remember if it was Ghost or if it was the third one where you just, like, you know, we get the opening. I know we get the helicopter chase in the opening of one, but it's just, like, we peaked too soon, and we don't want this to be the
plane stunt in Rogue Nation.
Yeah. Yes.
Right? Like, you started a movie with the coolest stunt of the movie. and like maybe of the franchise, right? Like that's a tough place to start. And it does seem that they were cognizant of that this time, right?
Yeah, like that was a big promo piece. Like I've seen the video of Tom hanging off of that airplane like every day of my life. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like that was like,
and it was that the was first thing you see in the movie. It's weird. Yeah.
Very weird.
So that was, yeah, exactly. So we didn't want it to that to happen too soon. But Akoa, I think you're absolutely right. Like having a stripped down, quote unquote, simple stunt, because we're so used to seeing Ethan do the extravagant and do the, of course, the impossible, right? Like all of his stunts are so out of the ordinary that we had to get something that was pretty simple. And it was just like, well, a halo jump isn't simple because Tom actually trained for a year getting ready for that halo jump scene. That was something that just did seem pretty
simple. That's how you know these movies are crazy. That's the simple stunt.
Right,
exactly.
That's the easy one. Yeah. That's how insane these things are.
And when it turns out, like, skydiving is just really fucking cool, you know? And, like, whenever it's in a movie, it's good. Point Break. Like, anytime somebody has a skydiving scene, it fucking rocks.
Every time. So there was actually a halo jump scene, Chris. I know
it sure is, dude. It's going to hit.
You remember the halo jump scene? Every time. Chris, you remember the halo jump scene in Godzilla? Like, how cool that shot was?
Oh, yeah. The 2014 or whatever? Yeah, like, that was another one that's just, like, very cool. It's like we're saying, like, across the board, they're just cool every time. Like, the colors that they're using in that one and some of the stakes, and it's just, like... Mm-hmm. It's just a really, really fun stunt that you're just always super locked. Like, Godzilla's in the movie. Like, a couple of times Godzilla's in the movie. But it's like, but also, you know what I mean? Like, again, one of the most iconic things is people are like, the halo jump scene is it like, some people would probably mention that scene to you before anything Godzilla related, because it's just like, yeah, man, it's just that cool every time. Like, don't mind the fact that Godzilla's in the movie for like 7 minutes. That's not what we, that's not why. Just the halo jump is just, it's just very cool. Like, it is crazy how like that is something that'll stand out to you in a kaiju movie. And it's like, yeah, they had some guys jump out of a plane. It fucking ruled.
It did rule. And they had like you said, that they had the colors too, like the flares on the end on their I think it was on their legs, maybe off their backpacks or something. That was awesome. Like that scene was just shot, and there was no music in that scene either. It was really quiet, dude. Oh, it was sick. It was really sick. But we get the halo jump, and of course, like we talk about, Walker gets knocked out mid jump. He gets hit by lightning, and so now Ethan has to find him and then get them both down to the ground safely. And it actually led to my laugh out loud scene, because after Ethan safely gets him down and he's laying down and he's breathing real hard, Walker's like, looks like you lost your oxygen. Just like real casually.
It's like you lost your oxygen.
I'd kick his ass.
You
lost your oxygen there.
I would have fucked him up. So
switch tanks with him mid air.
I would have shot him in the face right then. Like, even after saving him mid air,
It does suck that, like, the whole conspiracy could have ended in just if he'd have just let that motherfucker hit the ground.
I know.
Right.
Like
17 minutes into
Thor
the movie.
Thor was telling us, you know, he was telling us that this was a bad dude.
This is the guy.
Or Zeus.
He even says it later on, right? He was like, my only mistake was not letting you die.
Yeah. Turns out.
It's true, though.
People say that but he meant it. You know, he was correct in this instance. Had he died, way 100%. Shorter movie.
Yeah. Super short. Yeah. Short and sweet.
And it still would have made $800 million.
Imagine how fucked up that would have been if they like hyped up the Henry Cavill casting and then he dies in the first stunt. I'd be so pissed off.
So mad. He just dies because of a faulty shoot. It's just like, this movie
sucks. Yeah, he dies like a Looney Tunes character. He pulls it. Fucking cantaloupe
he
comes
hits the
out
ground
or some
and
shit.
Accordions his way up.
They have a little
Henry Cavill, would you cry when your chute blew up?
was just trying when the chute blew up.
Give me that goddamn oxygen.
Son of a bitch. But we get the would-be Lark meeting with the White Widow, and of course we have to intercept Lark, and so we then get
craziest ass whooping.
Arguably, dude, arguably the best.
He was in there kicking one of the
best
shit
fight. I mean, the best fight scene in this. The best fight scene in this series, arguably the best bathroom fight scene of all time, and we've got some doozies of. So Casino Royale featured a fight scene in the bathroom. Of course, yeah, True Lies featured
good bathroom
a
fight.
Very good bathroom fight. True Lies, which we talked about, a good bathroom fight. Where does this rank in the pantheon of bathroom fights for y'all?
Man, this one fucking rules, man. Like, really rules. Yeah, like the guy they picked to play is just like a very good martial artist too. Like he was just like whooping ass, man. That shit ruled.
When he rips the pipe off and he uses it, he's like grabbing, he puts it behind
that dude's neck.
Yeah, he puts it behind Walker's neck and just like holding him in place and just like punches him and knocks him out. I'm like, good God, there is no beating this man. He ripped the sink pipe out and he's still kicking the shit out of people. It's a fantastic bathroom fight. Again, that's peak. Put people in a place where they should not be fighting. Like the tension of like they're all washing their hands, and like if he's in between them.
Oh, Karate Kid. That's a good bathroom fight.
Ooh, what, the Jaden Smith one?
The original one. Remember when he had the, when he was in the, he went as the shower?
Yeah. So yeah, Chris, I'll let you talk about that scene though, because I feel like that scene was made specifically for you. We're fighting in spots that we're not supposed to be. I mean, the fight originated, they were all in the stall. And the guy woke up while they were in there trying to keep quiet before he was drugged, and then, then all mayhem breaks out. Chris, just talk about that fight scene from a technical aspect, a choreography aspect, and just from just a good fight scene aspect of it. How awesome was that scene?
Yeah, I mean, it hits all the beats. Like, it's even got some comedy to it. You know, he tries to, they're washing their hands, and you know, Hunt tries to go in and hit him with the needle. It doesn't work, and Walker just smacks him upside the fucking head with the suitcase and knocks him out.
Shit out of him.
You're like, dude, he just, like, gets stiffed and just falls straight back. Like, there is no, like, leg curl. He just goes straight back. And, like, even the scene where they're, like, all loaded up in the stall, and, like, it looks like there's an orgy going on. You got the guys who are coming in laughing. Like, that's funny. Like, that plays into the whole aspect of, like, how do you deal with these kind of scenarios in a place that you just should not be doing this kind of shit. And so, I mean, like, just the destructions, you know, like, that bathroom was, like, out of commission for, like, the next year. They tore up every fucking stall. They're ripping wire, not wires, ripping the pipes out of the wall. Yeah, places, there's so much blood everywhere. Done. Like, I mean, the choreography on it is, like, it's just so good. And again, it's one of those things where it's like you have to introduce something different to try to challenge these characters. I'm sure they fought other martial artists that I'm blanking on, but a lot of the stuff in this has just been like some brawling mixed with like a little technical stuff, because, you know, they're special agents, so they don't, you know, they're not just fighting like guys on the street. But to bring in this guy who is just like this,
they
super
didn't have any answers for him. He was like, yo, you know, like no one just could do anything about it.
He could do anything.
He was just whooping ass and like doing like cartwheels and shit, and like would take turns. He would stop whooping one dude's ass for a second, whoop the other dude's ass. You know, it was like
before the other guy could get up, he's like, "All right, back to you." And just like, gee, like he's beating up Henry Cavill and Tom Cruise. Like, you have to, again, this movie is casted so well with a lot of talented people. Like, you have to bring in a guy who can really sell kicking that kind of ass to do that.
He was whooping wholesale ass.
They had to kill him, Keith. Ilsa, a third person had to come in the bathroom and shoot him.
Yeah.
Right.
That's how it got out of that. If Ilsa doesn't come in,
that's how.
Sorry.
She said, "Can you still make a face?" He goes, "Can you still make a mask?" He's like, "Well, he needs a face."
Throws his coat over him.
He needs a
even
face.
Even like the big puddle of blood, like when the guys come in. Fake, like, Walker has a nose, but you can see that puddle of blood in the background. I'd be like, No way that much blood came out of his nose and you stopped now. Like, that puddle of blood from when she shot him in the head that you can see in the background when she's faking like she's, you know, just dealing with this nosebleed. It's so much. I would have been like, hell no. They let off a bomb in this bitch. I'm out of here.
Seriously, though. Like, he... That was before that, though. So, in a deleted scene that should have stayed in before he fought him, he said, you can just stand here and get your ass beat, or we can go outside and get your ass beaten. So, I don't know if you guys saw that. He did.
That's what he also said when she walked in. That's when she came to tell him, and she's like, oh, shit, that guy's trying to kill him. I'm not even here for all of that.
He's like, who wrote the note?
I'm going to kick everybody's ass in here until y'all tell me.
Yeah.
So they told Solomon Lane they were breaking him out. Did you know that his wiener's back?
He'd been in the clink a long time, man, so I guarantee you he had no idea about any of it. He was complete. Oh, dude, he was lost. Was lost. So we get John Locke is out. He's out. We don't have the John Locke mask, and we get the face-to-face meeting with the White Widow, which looks like the entire room wants to either kill Ethan or White Widow or both, and it was supposed to be a public, very public setting, and we get just an entire... That scene turns into John Wick, where everybody is just trying to kill one or two people, but we get... at this point in Ethan's career, would he not be widely recognizable in the criminal underworld?
That's always funny. Like, it's like that in Bond movies too. Like, how no right. one knows that this person has been on 26 missions and like spoiled everybody's fucking plans to destroy the world. And nobody just put him on Instagram, you know?
Right.
No one's seriously, got like a criminal Instagram picture. Yeah.
Right. They don't have a
Finsta.
You just
got to suspend that disbelief and just go on from it, you know?
Bet. That's true. Very true. So, yeah, we get the meeting with the White Widow, and Ethan is talking to her. Cole, talk about that meet and greet with her and what we end up having to do going forward as far as, like, now he's on the criminal side of things trying to get to Solomon Lane, and obviously we don't know what's going to happen yet, but they get to, you know, she's talking to him, asking about John Locke and figuring out what's going on, and they get back to her place with the brother, and we get all the plan laid out. How dramatic was that scene as far as, like, seeing what the plan is and then figuring out that we're not getting plutonium, we're getting an actual person, and then the person that needs to get picked up is Solomon Lane?
Yeah, it perfect, like, full circle, because it is cool that, like, the bad guys in these movies are always different, but they, like, kind of bring back one of those guys, and he's not the ultimate bad guy in this. I mean, well, I guess he kind of is, honestly, but he's not the guy that they spend most of the time on as being the bad guy, right? Because we're still trying to figure out who John Locke is, et cetera. And it is very cool to do that, because it, like, I never expected it to be a recycled bad guy. And that guy was, you know, particularly good. We liked him. We talked about him a good bit in when we did the Rogue Nation pod, which was, you know, forever ago now. But the the amount of, like, surprise that you kept getting, it's like, okay, this is the guy you're going to extract. You're going to trade him for the plutonium. All that sort of stuff. It brought the movie to a new level of, like, intensity, because you're like, all right, well, Tom Cruise is in this situation, right, that he is saying that he's John Locke. He's going to have to see his way through it, like, deep cover, which is always a very, very fun movie trope, right? Whenever you put somebody that's a good guy into a situation where they got to play a bad guy, you just never know what's going to happen, right? And it's always fun to watch. And that's exactly what happened here, because you're like, we know he's not going to just kill all these innocent police officers. But then they give us that, like, cutaway scene of him doing it. And it's like, oh, shit, okay, like, this is pretty fucking dark for a second. So they did a lot of really cool stuff in this one. And I what impresses me about it is that they're able to keep making these movies and find new ways to kind of either trick us or surprise us or just all in all throw us, even though, like, at a certain point, like, the stunts are gonna have to, you know, recycle or something, you know, but they always seem to find new fresh ways to tell a story too. And I think that is an underrated aspect about this franchise. It's like, it's not just here's him in space, you know, flying a car. Here's him jumping out of an airplane. Here's him doing all this helicopter stuff. They're also elevating the storytelling, and that's pretty fucking sweet.
No, damn. It's dope. And
talk about my favorite movie better than I ever could. Holy shit. He cooked. He cooked in the pot.
Y'all step back.
Yeah, I know. There's nothing
we ran an ISO. Killed it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Calling off the fender. Yeah. When called off Jokic, and Jokic was like, I got 42, dude. You remember who I'm talking about, Keith?
It's probably Bruce Brown or somebody. Somebody didn't make any sense. Fucking MPJ.
Yeah, somebody was like,
Michael Porter Jr. Yeah.
Somebody got on him and he was like, no, I got him. And he was like, dude, I got 42. I'll find it and send you that clip.
Yeah, that shit's great though. But yeah, exactly though. I mean, like we get that whole scenario, and I always love like a mental rundown of a scene like that, and where Ethan is playing out that scene in his head as far as like what needs to happen or how the scene's going to go down, and we get that whole scene playing out in Ethan's head as he's standing there at the table, figuring out exactly what's going to happen. As they do try to get Solomon Lane, and we get the picture of Lane, and like this, just that scene was perfectly dramatic. Chris, you know, talk about that scene as well, and just the dramatic aspects of it. How awesome was that from a plot standpoint, but also just how well it was acted, in particular with Tom Cruise.
Oh man, you have put me in a very unfortunate place. Cause this is actually my best scene. So yeah, like I won't harp too much on it now. But dude, I love that.
I knew it.
It's just like, it's this perfect. That's what I was like when you started to ask me. I was like, damn, he's still talking about this scene. I hope he doesn't call on me.
Yeah. Put that one.
I almost went to lie. I'm like, damn, Keith, the scene ain't that good. Just so you would move on. Was, but yeah, no,
right,
I mean,
right, yeah.
Dude,
seriously
it,
though,
it is like so.
That shit
cool,
wouldn't even
that
great.
Like,
yes. Kind of booty.
Just the side eye. But I mean, so that scene, it's just like, it's cool for so many reasons. And again, I'll keep it brief because I'm going to blab on it longer a little bit later. But it's just like, it's one of those things that does kind of trick us. And I like the way they use the score. But like also, like once you learn, it's just like a almost a worst case scenario. It's like this further insight to Ethan as a person to see, like, you know, all the things that he's done to make sure that the mission is accomplished, all the insane feats, like all the stuff that's kind of grimy that he's kind of done, but he's just like, this scene or this specific plan, he's just like, this is way too far. There's three plutonium cores like out in the wind that they need bad.
Yeah.
Right, like that whole city would be gone anyways, and it's just like, and this would be, you know, again, we've talked about how bad that plan would be, but this would be, you know, the way to get him done and do what the courier wants. And Ethan just like, that's too much. Like, that's too high of a price to have to pay for something like this. Like, there has to be a better way. And like the cutaway to that, and like how it feels like just this natural transition into it actually being the scene, and like how, you know, there's no audio or not, there's no dialogue, I guess. It's just the, just like the score that they've got playing over that. It's just like this very beautiful score. It was like this rendition of a certain part of the main theme. And even like the, like, filter is the wrong word, but like the lighting and kind of the filter on, like, it kind of has this dream sequence like look to, like, when you go back and watch it after you've seen it a couple times, you're like, okay, this looks different than the rest of the movie. So it's like something is going on here. Maybe Ethan, you know, like, we're supposed to see this as being just this awful thing, and he is doing it, but they don't want us to lose sight of that. But then you're like, oh, okay, it was, you know, for lack of a better term, it was like a daydream scene because of him kind of running through it in his head. And it, like Cole said, they find ways to do stuff like this to just kind of throw us off and keep us, like, interested. And, like, that scene is just a great way to, like I said, give us another look into Ethan's mind and show that, like, there is a too far with Ethan. And we've always known him to be like a good moral person. They mentioned in this movie, but like that is certainly one. Just like, Ethan has killed people before, but this is the one where he's just going, like, can't do that one, actually. Yes, you got, we're doing a little too much.
Which I get, because the plan was to literally just kill everybody in the city.
Yeah, you never had a chance, man. You did a great job.
Yeah,
yeah, no, like, don't, yeah, don't. Saying, Keith, the plan is just kill everybody. It's crazy.
It's a crazy plan.
That's literally, that's not even a plan.
There is!
That's not a plan, right? I would say that's not a plan. That's just like the backup. It's like, okay, if this doesn't work, then we just have a shootout and see what happens. Like, figure out the rest. That's not a plan.
Yeah, never. Right. Never works well. Yeah.
We have a better in Heat.
Yeah.
Sorry, buddy. Michael Mann ain't do this, and it's not going to go too well for you.
I'm no, sorry, Justine, if the goddamn chicken got a little overcooked.
She got a sweet ass.
And your head is all up in it.
Oh, man. If we ever do that one, that's going to end up being like a... That's going to be a... You talk about two-parters. That's going to be a two-part.
That's a long-ass movie, too. That's a solid 3 hours.
Oh, dude, it was... When it came out on DVD, it was two discs.
Yeah, I think it's on Netflix right now.
Shit,
we'll do it
dude.
One day for sure.
Netflix had to pull all their movies down because they didn't have enough storage to keep Heat and the rest of the catalog on there.
Yeah, right. They had to take a bunch of shit off, yeah. It's like Marriage Story's not on there anymore. It's like, God damn it.
I got the criteria and I'm okay. Yeah, they removed Marriage Story. You don't have to check on me. Don't be like, everyone check on Chris Lowry. Don't worry. I bought the criteria while it was on sale, so I'll be okay.
Oh, yeah, you good. It's a good call, Chris.
No, he's Gucci. He's
way to
gravy.
Be prepared.
Always. But we get to the actual plan, and Ethan is, while we have the plan is starting out as White Widow and her brother and the rest wanted to do it. Of course, Ethan has his own plan. That conversation between Ethan and Walker is great, because that's when Walker realizes that whenever it does come to what will be end up being the face-to-face meeting with Solomon, Walker's like, wait a second, you're the guy who took him in. And, you know, that realization was great. But as Walker and the convoy are going by, Ethan, of course, he hits his truck, eats Lane's truck into the water, and then we have the plan that Ethan
that
and
shit
Benji
is so funny.
And oh, dude, just that realization of what was going to happen was so funny. It was just like the real time figuring it out. But Ethan knocks the truck and the armored truck into the water, and then we have Benji and the rest of the gang. They're all down there, and Ethan's plan to extract Lane without having to killing the rest of the city. And then we have the ensuing chase. Dude, that set piece, I forgot. So that chews up.
Get another great motorcycle scene.
Dude, how awesome was that set piece, Cole, going into, I mean, there's a lot of potential candidates for best scene in this movie. How awesome was that in regards to just great scenes in this movie in general?
Man, it's top of the list, because it felt, and you could tell that they did a lot of it on scene. And, like, Paris is just an iconic place to do any sort of action scene. Because, like,
oh,
everything
get to
about
the arc?
Paris feels like Paris, oof. Right? Yep. Oh, yeah, and he's just driving fucking motorcycle through it, going full speed. And apparently that, like, was a real scene that they, like, shut down the road to make happen type stuff. And, you know, they just have, like, again, that's just a set piece that's just always going to work, right? And so I love that scene. I think it's one of my favorite in the movie for sure, just because, like, again, it's iconic. You get to see all of these different spots that, like, you've seen in movies before, but it's Ethan Hunt doing it, right? And then you get a motorcycle, you get a car, you get a boat, you get all sorts of good stuff in this one, man. Like, any vehicle you want, they're going to throw it in there for just a second, at the very least.
Dude, it's like almost land, sea, and air in that whole particular scene. Like, we got all of it. Then, of course, we get Faust. She shows up, and she's trying to kill Solomon. And, dude, there's just so many things going on. And it's great. Like, it all works out.
Yeah, he runs over her.
Yep.
He hits her with a fucking car.
How awesome.
You don't come back from that, man. You don't come back from that.
Like, full on. Yeah.
No, that's tough. That's a tough bounce back.
Which part, Keith? Like, just that whole
just
stuff
that
in general?
Yeah, just that
like
scene in general from from extracting Lane to just the ensuing chase, and then even going to the face to face with Hunt and Faust, as far as like why she's trying to get to Solomon Lane and what all she's got cooking behind the scenes.
Oh, I mean, that scene is incredible, and it's another of those instances where, like, it's kind of this very same kind of thing that we've seen. You know, we've seen some really cool chases. We've seen a lot of cool car and motorcycle stuff in these movies before, but, like, it has these interesting parts that come into play, like, a little bit at a time. Like, it is like, okay, let's bust Lane out, so I have to do a couple things with the car to, you know, I have to ram an armored truck into a river, then I have to ditch this truck and get all the guys out of it. It's like, okay, then I get off that, then I have to get on a bike and run from all these police officers, and then I'm gonna, when he's running, when like he's like escaping the circle of them and that car just hits him and he just goes flying, you're like, oh shit, it's over, like this, you know, he's not gonna get up, they may actually catch him. And then of course he, you know, he goes and he cuts through the wire and he drops down in the boat with them. And they've got Lane, and they go to do the extraction, and it feels like it's over. Like, you think, like, okay, you know, they've accomplished a part of the mission. You know, they're going to move on. And then here comes the wild card of, you know, Ilsa shooting at the car, point blank, with all of them in it.
All of them.
It's like, it's a cool scene. Like, you keep thinking that, like, it's going to tone down, and it's over. Like, they've done the hardest part. Like, it's, you know, we're going to get another, you know, 15 minutes of fluff. And then, you know, bullets just start flying, and you're like, what's going on? So that scene is incredible because like it is like this nonstop ride. Like even when it hits the moment where I said it's slow and you think it's over, it doesn't last, you know, for long. Like you don't even get to go into any of the normal Mission Impossible in between set piece dialogue before fucking, you know, Ilsa Faust starts shooting at Ethan Hunt. So that, and it's like, and that scene is also kind of long, but it's so fun and it's so like engaging that you don't realize, and you look up and you're like, holy shit, this whole little sequence is like 20 minutes long. I didn't even realize it. Yeah, like it, you feel like you blink and it's over, but it's just like you're looking like this, you know, and again, it has a lot of parts to it. But you know, you take a look and like this actually took a decent chunk of time. And there are like a lot of movies are like this is their big scene that they end the movie on, and this movie is just like, we're gonna put this right in the middle. We're gonna do another hour and a half worth of shit after, if that's okay with you guys.
Yeah, this is just an appetizer for what's coming.
Yeah,
and honestly, arguably, so my best scene, it actually was culminated with one of the calmest moments in movie history. Like Ethan chasing Ethan chasing Walker through the city and getting navigated by Benji, only to catch up to Walker, and all Walker did was simply lay down a picture of Julia. I was like, that is the coldest move of all time.
Yeah, that's cold shit. Yeah.
It's an evil fella.
Set it on the
floor. He said, I'm her guardian angel.
Yeah.
Don't do that to me. Don't put a picture of my ex-wife that I still love down and say, I'm her guardian angel. I would have ripped through the chain metal on that floor and I would have killed him. There's like a lot of time this movie was like, man, dude, if I was there, I would have turned into a feral wolf and attacked that person. I would have started chewing through the metal like I was an insane person and got to him. Because no way he said that to you. No way you put a picture of her on the ground and said, I'm her guardian angel. You got to kill that guy.
You know, that scene actually doesn't make a ton of sense to me when he... it's one of the ones that I'm just kind of confused about, so maybe y'all can explain it to me. But when Tom Cruise is hanging on the bottom, I was like, you can't do it because you haven't gotten the plutonium yet. And then the next scene, he does have the plutonium, and they're building all the bombs. So why couldn't he just shoot him on the elevator?
I had always read it as, I guess that they still think that he's Lark, so maybe he does need him, or maybe they needed to get it from the courier. But it's like you said, they just have it anyway in the next scene. So it's like in the moment it works, the very next scene you're like, what?
Wait, where did we? What happened? Yeah, it's always confusing to me. Yeah,
no, I'm with you. Like even like this time, it just throws me off too. Because again, like the first time you see it, it makes total sense. But then like the movie,
then
I guess,
next scene,
forgets.
They're trying to kill him, right? Like, he could have ended him. Like, yeah, I've got a gun in my room. We'll shoot him together. We'll kill him. Bang! It'll be fun.
How was that played? Like, we've done that like three movies in a row now. It's hilarious that still keeps
coming. Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea how that keeps coming up.
A lot of guns in these movies.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Lots of rooms with guns.
Maybe because Tom Cruise was in that Austin Powers movie.
At the very beginning, yeah. He played played Austin Powers. Member. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
But at that point, so at this point, we did have August. He was talking to Sloan, and he was kind of laying that foundation as far as, like, Ethan could be the mole, and, you know, maybe he is a John Larkey selling out the American government agencies and all that. So it starts to creep into the audience's mind just a little bit. Obviously, we know that Ethan is a good guy, but then we have Walker trying to cover his tracks, and he's laying that down. So after we get Lane extracted, and he's, you know, the whole gang is together, and then we have Hundley showing up, and we got that whole meet, and they're going to execute their plan as far as, like, get their name off the hook, and we're going to do the rest of the things. Ethan, what we think is Ethan leaving Lane behind while Benji and the rest of them go do their thing. It's actually Benji left behind, and Solomon's going with them. Cole, you know, I know we're going back to the mask gag twice, and he's like, it's just like I said, it's Halloween, and you guys are just wearing masks, you know, and he comes to that realization. But how cool of a reveal was that? Oh, also, Chris, sorry, 1 hour and 9 minutes we get the word Fallout mentioned in this movie. I don't know if you caught that.
Yeah, Fallout. Yeah.
It took a while.
Just said Fallout of your
Fallout
actions.
Of this would be,
the Fallout. They had a fight to work it in there. Like, I won't lie. They,
they
definitely
had
like three people sitting
in
there. Like, how do we make this one work?
Oh, big time.
It's like, that's one of those, it's like, they had to get a couple heads together. Like, how are we going to make this happen?
How are we
going to
pull this off? Yeah.
They got it.
They made it work.
I'm still saying there's no shot they say Dead Reckoning. There's just, you can't put that
please,
in a real
God,
sentence. There's
please.
No shot they say Dead Reckoning in this
please
movie.
Make it happen.
They're going to pull it off, man. Impossible. We're going to be sick, but they're going to pull it off. Yeah, I think that scene is, you know, it's always good when they do the double blind, because you never really know when they're going to go back to the well, but you know they're going to go back
right
at some point.
It's going to happen.
And you get a sneaking suspicion in this scene that it's definitely Benji about halfway through it, just because of the way they, like, set it up so quickly. But again, it was one of those things that they haven't really done one quite like that, where they've just done it immediately and kind of tipped their hand to it. Usually they find a way to do a little bit more of a clever hide it, but I don't think it would have worked in this. So they just, like, kind of threw it in there real quick, and then it still had this super cool impact, because you're like, oh yeah, he's fucking got him.
Oh, dude, whenever he hit him with that, like, hit himself with the own line, like, it was his own realization. He just, like, it's just Halloween, you guys are just wearing mat, and he just, like, stopped mid-sentence, and he knew
it was
up.
Yeah, damn it.
At that point, he had
been. Imagine if it wasn't him, though. He just, like, went up and started pulling on his skin like that.
Yeah.
What
he's a man, man.
He's a man, baby. Pulling on his mom's real hair. But yeah, dude, so we get the reveal. Dude, 1 hour and 26 minutes into this movie, we get the reveal that he's actually the villain, and he's working with the apostles, and he's the bad guy. So we get that shootout there, and he, you know, of course he escapes. We get the dude, again, my best scene, just because of how dramatic it was and the score involved in it, but the chase scene where Ethan runs him down, and we get it all to the elevator, and it all meets at this random medical village. Like, this whole thing that Lane seemingly set up from the jump, where we have the smallpox outbreak, and we have the random village, in the medical village in Kashmir, where Julia and Eric are, and we have that grand meeting there where we're going to get the medical village, but it's also a place where, you know, we're going to starve 1/3 of the world water population by setting off the detonation there to just, like, to hurt as many people as possible at one time. Chris, you know, talk about a grand culmination of something like that Julia reveal at the end. That was, for me, that was an audible gasp. That was a big time oh shit moment. How big of a moment was that in this series, in regards to just this movie in general, and the plot and all those things?
Same way for me. I remember being in the theater, and, like, I didn't, like, let out, like, a full gasp. Like, it did catch me off guard, right? Because you do see her not too long ago in the movie, where it's a picture of her, and so you understand that, you know, the apostles know about her, so it's like, okay, she's in play to a degree, but you certainly don't expect her to pop up in the movie the way that she does. So when they get to that village and you find out, like, just how many parts of, you know, his personal life and his agent life have, like, come together in this grand moment where, you know, Lane's plan is to hurt Ethan Hunt as much as possible. It's like, it's of course, it's foreshadowed in a way by the scenes early on. He's having the dreams about them being married, and Lane is there setting bombs off. So when he gets there and it's Julia that turns around, it's like, it just throws you for a loop. And again, the stakes in this were already high. Like, you know, whether Julia was there or not, I think, like, you know, those bombs going off and poisoning the water supply would be bad. But, like, you just have this extra level of, like, oh, shit, with Julia being there, because, like, it's just going to ruin everything that matters to Ethan. So that being the culmination, and it's, again, like, you know, the smallpox and stuff that had been teasing, that's another one of those things. It's like, you don't put it together, but of course you don't put it together because you have no reason to think that it's all going to tie in that way.
Yep. Exactly.
And so when it does, it really just throws you for a loop. Poor Eric. He didn't even know what almost happened to him that day. I hope he never finds out, by the way.
Ever.
Yeah, poor Eric.
Yeah. If you guys ever find out that I was like that close to something like that, don't tell me. Let me live in the ignorance.
Just let you. Yeah, I got you.
Oh, I won't.
Like, yeah, Chris, there was like some plutonium about 45 feet from me that they almost blew up. Don't tell me that.
Yeah, I don't want to know that. Please don't ever tell me that. Cole, how awesome was that scene to you and with everything involved?
Again, it's one of those, like I was talking about earlier, where they just keep finding ways to elevate the storytelling, because it's like, of course you thought there would be bombs that somebody had to de-detonate.
Oh, to...
they had to find a way to deactivate them or something of that nature. But yeah, the fuse, that'll work. I'll take that one. and what's really cool is they kind of take Tom Cruise completely out of it. As far as that part of it goes, right?
Yeah.
He's searching to try to find the trigger. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, we get Rebecca Ferguson getting to be that main character role where she's doing the fighting, she's helping Benji find the bomb. And meanwhile, we've also got Luther with Julia and just having Julia, very, very good, like, emotional scene that they're having together where they're playing off of each other extremely well. So you get her moment, you get his moment, and then you just get the entire expectation and the spectacle of the Tom Cruise, Ethan Hunt character just, you know, basically saving the day, but in a different way than you normally get because the whole team is a part of it.
She did have really good scene in that, or a good line in that, because she was like, where else am I going to go? It's like, right, yeah, because he's like, Julia, get out of here. It's like, well, where is she going to go? She's not going to get out of the way of this blast, right? It's not like she's going to get any kind of safe distance from it. So that was actually a really good nod. But
right,
an extremely dramatic scene to end the movie from several different vantage points. Of course, we've got to find the bomb. Luther finds one, and then we still need Benji and Faust to find the other. Which they do. Benji sees Solomon Lane, and he goes to engage Lane himself in that house, and then so we have Faust that has to find him. On top of all that, Ethan's got to go get the detonator, but he's got to chase down, so he's got to climb a rope up to a helicopter and then chase down Walker to get the detonator, and then bring Walker's helicopter down as well. So it's just like,
learn how to fly
a thousand different
things. He has to figure it out mid.
Right. Oh, yeah. Right. I forgot to mention that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's okay. I got you.
All these things that he has to figure out how to do. So then it's just one thing after the next. We get the bombs, defusing the bombs and having to make sure that we're cutting the right wire. The fight scene between Solomon Lane, Faust, and Benji. I mean, everything. And of course, Ethan chasing down another helicopter. All in less than 15 minutes. And again, I meant to time it this time to see how close we were to actually 15 minutes, but we were right there at the actual, it was a buzzer beater to defuse the bombs and to have the detonators as well. So that was freaking awesome. And then on top of that, we have Julia and her husband, you know, like her new husband meeting Ethan, you know, and he was in Turtuk. And he was on his way out, and he heard that the village needed help and all this other stuff, like having to just, like, you know, make up this story on the fly, and they work together and all this other thing. So all in all, an awesome, awesome movie. Again, these movies just continue to get better and better, and that's why I'm so excited for Dead Reckoning, because it's just difficult for me to wrap my head around this
series. I just want to see how you follow this up.
Right.
Yeah, right. Like, this
what do you
got
to make to follow this fucker up, you know?
Like, if you end on this one, it's like, boy, what an insanely high note to go out on. Like, this right. movie is, you know, one of my favorite blockbusters. Maybe even my favorite blockbuster. I have to think correct. Of some other. I could be blank, but definitely one of my favorite ones certainly the last 5 years. I'm sure there's some back a little bit longer.
It's a very good movie, for sure. And just, like, to do what they do, it's fucking awesome.
No, that's great. So there's like, some large shoes to fill.
How they followed up the trailers for Dead Reckoning look cool. Oh.
Yeah, right.
And to talk about that with the, you know, talk about like, oh, after the sixth movie, we really got some big shoes to fill. It's like, what are we talking about here? After how many movies? But that's what we are. And that's what we got to be, like, Dead Reckoning. Yeah. It's amazing. Absolutely amazing. But we're going to go into our categories and start with Laughing Out Loud. I did mention mine earlier, but after the Halo jump, Walker says to Ethan, he says, "Look like you lost your oxygen tank." And of course, totally unbeknownst to him that Ethan saved his life and switches oxygen mid Halo jump just to make sure that Walker got down to the ground safely. So that did make me laugh because he just casually mentioned that. Cole, what about you? What had you laughing?
I'm kind of with Chris, man. Two guys getting their ass beat in a public restroom is never not going to be funny. Like, they were getting the fuck beat out of them by this guy that was, like, significantly smaller. And he just was, like, martial arts. He pulled shit out of a sink to wrap around people's throats and stuff. And, like, it took a gun to the head to stop him. But that was hilarious to watch those guys just get the shit beat out of them. In the whitest bathroom in the fucking place.
Dude, it made my eyes hurt. It was so, like, fucking
you know how dirty bathrooms are? Why would you make everything fucking white? It's crazy.
Seriously.
Guy goes in there with one bad stomach ache.
Yeah, no, right. Look. That whole fucking place is ruined.
It's a catastrophe.
I don't see them shits.
Look at some go-gurts in there. All right, Chris, what was your laugh out loud scene?
Oh, man, I got a couple, but I'll keep them short. So, again, yeah, the bathroom thing, it's just so funny, right? Like, you have this guy who is somehow even smaller than Tom Cruise, and he's in there with Henry Cavill. Now, I think the funny part is, like, granted, Henry Cavill's a big guy. When you, like, kick him and, like, fucking all the stalls just come apart, it's like, holy shit, what's this guy's issue? Again, Henry Cavill's huge, so he probably could rip every stall out of a wall.
Yeah.
But it's funny just how much shit that destroys you. There's that one. There is when he's about to go meet the White Widow, and Walker goes, "Hope isn't a strategy," and Ilsa's like, "Oh, you must be new." Because, again, be new. I think it's – I love how many times that he's just, like, this guy who's – like, the only, he's the bad guy, but he's, like, the only person in the movie who makes any kind of sense relative to how crazy the IMS stuff is. When Ethan is doing the motorcycle thing and he hits the car and just goes tumbling, like, the split second you can see it's, like, a CGI / like a body double is, like, the funniest thing, because he's, like, in midair, just still in the fetal position. So, like, the shot of it, it's, like, it's very fast, but it's very funny. And then, like, honestly, the whole signature chase when he's after Lark, it has some really funny moments. I think, like, the funniest one is when Benji's telling him to go right, and he's like, right, and he's like, I'm sorry, left, and he's like, I had the screen lock on
upside
down.
I was worried.
I was like, yeah. Yeah. He's like, sorry, oh, sorry, I had it 2D? On 2D still. And when Ethan throws that chair out the window, I don't know why, but, like, the whole scene is just, like, kind of, you can just see him, like, running. Yeah, he's, like, spinning, building, like, the momentum and the strength up to bust the window with. It's, like, that whole – the whole chase sequence is – it's, again, it's a very good one, but there are a couple of comedy moments that they insert there that really, really make me laugh. So, Cole, how was the Benji funny ratio to you in this one?
I think they nailed it, man. I think they nailed it.
Like, you got it, they got it right again? Yep,
I think so. I think Rogue Nation was the only one that I feel like they kind of got out of hand a little bit. This one, I think they nailed it, yeah.
Yeah, the back-to-back-to-back jokes in the chase sequence, and I was like, oh, Cole might not like that.
Yeah,
I guess he was...
He did have pretty
solid. He almost had there, one too many.
That's true, yeah. But I don't recall it bothering me this much this time.
Yeah, that's what I'm like, but I guess he was toned down the rest of the movie, so it wasn't bad. He could get three jokes in a row off, and it'd be fine.
Yeah, they want to get a couple quick hits in, yeah.
Oh, no doubt. All right, so I mentioned mine earlier, but my Mr. Mustang was Wolf Blitzer. I really liked him being inserted into the movie. Obviously, it was Benji in a mask, but him coming in and playing himself, or Benji, this dude, playing a dude, this guy's another dude, and then coming in and using the same gag that we got in Mission Impossible 2, I thought was really dope. So I was all in on Wolf Blitzer. So that's my Mr. Mustang. Cole, who'd you have?
Man, for me, it was Paris as an action sequence. I mean, sorry, as an action set piece. Because, like, again, that just never doesn't work in a movie to have a chase scene that goes through Paris. So, Paris as Mr. Mustang.
All right, Chris, who you got as your Mustang?
I got two, but I'll keep them quick. So, I went with Angela Bassett. She is just very great as Sloane. She is, like, certainly the menacing, super direct, on top of things, very serious, like not fucking around with the IMF kind of person. She just does a great job playing that character. It's like I almost wish we had her in it a bit more because I love her so much, but she'd be a little too captivating, you know what I mean? And the other one, I went with Liang Yang. He's the guy that was kicking the shit out of Henry Cavill and Tom Cruise in the bathroom. Yep. He just legendary a fantastic job. Really?
Yeah. He did. He did some stunt work for Skyfall. I forget the other stuff he's done, but yeah, he's kind of a guy that's been a part of a lot of like really good movies, doing like the stunt coordination and stuff like that.
I'll give him a deep dive here soon. Yeah, because I mean, what a role to pull. It's like, hey, we're gonna bring you in to beat up Ethan Hunt and Superman. You know, we're going to bring him to just be on screen with these super big stars and just really fuck him up. And man, he does a phenomenal job. Like, he sells it so well. And if he's this legendary stuntman, he's doing like all of that stuff on his own. And so to be able to just do all that stuff and look that convincing and just like keep up with the choreography and just be as imposing as he is between those two people, it's just like, you know, what a 5-minute run to get to just get as an actor. So those are mine. They were just
those are two solid ass Mustangs. I'm not gonna lie to you.
Yeah.
All right. So for the Diesel, I'm not even gonna get cute. It's August Walker, Cavill's character as August Walker. He's just a bad dude from the beginning. Took us the whole movie to realize that he was the bad guy, or to get revealed that he was the bad dude. You know, working for the CIA, and of course we get him. You know, the double cross, triple cross, whatever you want to call it. He's actually working for the apostles. And then he got hit in the face by a helicopter at the end. So he's a Diesel. Cole, who'd you have?
A Diesel, definitely Walker. Yeah. And for, you know, obvious reasons, but also taking a fucking grappling hook to the face as being the way you go down.
Attached to a helicopter.
Yeah, attached to a helicopter. Jesus. That Tom Cruise pulled down with one arm. So that's a tough beat. That's a Diesel.
Damn, you strong.
Damn. Yeah.
All right, Chris, who's your Diesel?
Same person, clean sleep. It's August Walker. At some point, you know, like he's around these guys this entire time, and I think he just thinks he could beat him. At some point, you just see them pull off the typical Mission Impossible, IMF, crazy Ethan Hunt stuff that I'd been like, I gotta rethink my whole plan because there's some supernatural shit going on. It's like, I don't know if you guys know, but we both got struck by lightning, and for some reason he woke up immediately. We may have to replan how to get this plutonium because there's no beating Ethan Hunt. Sure enough, he tries it. Yep. He chases him with the helicopter and tries to drop a rock on him from the helicopter. Like, at some point, you have to be like, this motherfucker is crazy. I need to abort my mission. No, I'm not beating this guy. So, yeah, that's mine. Yeah, his biggest mistake thinking he was going to beat Ethan Hunt. That's a huge L. That's Jameis Winston going out there and throwing with his left hand for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Can't do it, man. All right, so for Rents Due, there's a lot of people who were involved in this, obviously, who could be due for. I want the combination of Alec Baldwin and Angela Bassett. I like Sloane and Hunley's character a whole lot. And it's always so funny when we have the directors, you know, like the CIA or the IMF or whatever government agency, whenever they go toe-to-toe, because it's always a pissing contest. But anytime they were in a scene, they were captivating, right? Like, they both stole whatever scene they were in when they were together. It was just Godzilla and King Kong fighting. Like, it was just like just this two juggernauts just going toe to toe with each other, and it was great because it was just like going blow for blow, and then neither one of them wavered. So I thought Renton was due for both of them because I thought they were great to be inserted into a series this late into it and be awesome as awesome as they were. I thought it was great.
And then he gets stabbed. But now we don't. And they shut the fucking lights off. CIA raided that place.
Yeah, it's tough. So that's who Renton was due for me. Cole, what about you?
Man, I went with Henry Cavill. He was just so good in this. Like, he's just so fucking charming.
Incredible.
And he looked super cool. He looked super cool in this one, too. Like, I know we've had him in... The Man from U.N.C.L.E., and I think he also was my Rince due there, but I just feel like he has something, and it's weird that every time he's in a movie, I think about him as being like one of the better parts of the movie, but he just doesn't really have that career to back it up, you know? And that's a bizarre thing to say about a guy that played Superman and has been in a Mission Impossible movie and all that different stuff, and it really is a shame that, you know, he hasn't had a little bit more to do. Not that I'm saying his career was bad by any means, but it's just interesting because he toe-to-toe with some of the best actors in the game right now, and in the movie he was the guy I was most impressed by. So it's weird, man. Henry Cavill, though, Rince due.
Solid choice, not a bad one at all. He was convincing to be a bad guy. Chris, who'd you have?
Good at it.
Oh man, I also went with Henry Cavill. This might be obvious. I feel like I've been telegraphing it the last 11 episodes, but he's so good, man. We were talking about you got to switch it up. You have to do something to bring in a guy who can stand toe-to-toe with Hunt. And Cavill comes in and, you know, plays this physically imposing guy who we should just automatically... Again, you make this movie 20 years ago, there's no questioning that he's the bad guy. The second the casting is announced, you're like, oh, he's the main bad guy.
Right.
And he comes in and he does it. He pulls it off. Like, he serves as like a good foil to Ethan Hunt. Any movie with Solomon Lane, who's also a great antagonist for him, but he really comes in, and like Cole said, he just has that thing that just makes you gravitate towards him in every movie that he's in. And just like,
he's
man,
a
he's like
movie star.
He really is a movie star, and it's a shame that things haven't gone better for him. And you know, he comes in and he just plays his character in just like this fantastic way. Again, he feels like he's from a different movie because he's kind of approaching so much of the in-universe aspects of this stuff from a completely different point of view. Like he almost feels like such a real person. Like, these characters start to feel like not real people, and of course it's a work of fiction, but they can kind of get away and just really feel, again, kind of supernatural at times. And he comes in and plays this super grounded version of, I don't know, like almost like, you know, what Ethan Hunt could have ended up being. You know, Ethan Hunt could have certainly gone down a couple different paths, and he could have been Walker. And Cavill just delivers just this fantastic performance as his character that you just can't say enough about. So, yeah, that's mine.
Yeah, and I was on the fence. I was like, is this too obvious? But sometimes it is. Just, it does make sense to go with the obvious and not try to get too cute. But I really like Baldwin and Bassett in this one. But yeah, you're right. I mean, because up until this point, we didn't have Cavill as a bad guy, right? Yeah. He's
so many people in this were fucking fans.
Vanessa Kirby, I don't think we talked about her enough. I know I said like Leah Seydoux still kind of maybe cooked her, I think, a little bit. But even like Vanessa Kirby is like very good in this. Like, everybody in this movie
is she's
fans.
So good.
And, like, she didn't have very much to work with either, because that part is not very good. Like, that's kind of a boring, like, random character kind of thrown in. And, like, she still is, like, super cool. And, like, she has that pull-you-in type feeling, too, right? Like, she's got that charm, too.
Like, I can't give you any characteristic of her character other than it's just, like, she's rich, I think. But it's,
right,
like,
yeah. Right,
for but sure. But she makes it work. It's like I said, it feels like they try to do the Leah Seydoux. It's like this like character that you're really curious about, and you know, it's an actress that you love that kind of draws you in. But it doesn't work the same way with Vanessa Kirby in terms of the writing. She, like you said, Cole, she makes it work because she's awesome.
Yeah. But the role,
no,
it is not that fun.
It's a worse part.
Yeah.
All right, so for best scene, I touched on it earlier, but it's the foot chase of Ethan, which was hilarious because Ethan is running full tilt and jumping off of buildings and jumping out of windows and off, and Walker's just casually just walking throughout the rest of the scene. Like, he's not in, he doesn't have any kind of zero sense of urgency.
He's a real walker, I guess.
Let me know. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah,
man,
for
it's
sure.
It's the beauty of knowing where you're going, you know? If you know where you're going, you don't have to fucking run, you know?
You know, you're right. The beauty of knowing where you're going. Good point. That's how Jason Voorhees and Michael Myers always catch people. That's how they don't have to run.
They know where they're going.
They know you're
going
to be it.
Yeah.
Oh, they know
so
where they're going.
Ethan Hunt has to run is he doesn't have a fucking clue where he's going. He's like,
no
he's like
idea.
Oh, I got to get to the top of this building. Got a plane to catch. Helicopter to catch.
Yeah, man. So it was walking, that was my best scene. It was.
You got some Beatles playing
awesome.
Or something.
The navigation from Benji and
taking it easy.
All of it was just, it was amazing. Cole, what'd you have as your best scene?
Man, I got to go with the fucking helicopters, dude. That shit fucking slaps. Yeah. It was like a very long sequence, dude, but the two helicopters chasing, wrecking, a fist fight on the side of a mountain, and then a helicopter getting pulled down. They're hanging off the side of it trying to get to the switch, and then Tom Cruise free hands, solos up a mountain cliff, pulls a helicopter down, and sends a hook through Henry Cavill's face. Like, that's cinema, man.
That's what it's all about. That's,
that's what it's all about. This is, that's the power. That's the power of movies, you know?
100%. Absolutely. Chris, what'd you have as your best scene?
Touched on it earlier, but it's the scene where Ethan is kind of playing out Zola's plan in his head. Because, like I said, it gives you this insight into Ethan as a character. Again, it's, we already know about his morality. We already know his big thing is, you know, I think they mentioned it before this, there's something in him that he can't allow one life, you know, or he can't allow, you know, I'm blanking on what he says, but it's like, basically, it's like he won't allow, like, one life to perish to save 1,000, or like he would do whatever it takes to save everybody. And, you know, that scene and him seeing that as just this worst case scenario in a situation where there's plutonium just out in the wind, that's what's too much
hanging
for him. It's a really cool scene. Yeah, and he's like, nah, I know it'll give us plutonium, but I can't kill these people. And again, like, the score that's playing over it is just really beautiful. It's like, but it's also haunting, so it does continue to sell the, like, obviously, we know it's a bad thing because, like, we're normal people. We know that's, like, insane shit. But, like, it also helps to sell that, like, this is a nightmare kind of with the way that the scores play. And then I really like it's kind of called back to when they finally get to the car and they're about to escape with Lane and they shoot that lady cop that sees them. And, you know, it's like the, she's shot in, like, the same spot. She's, you know, holding the wound and the random Zola henchman walks up on him the same way that Ethan walked up on that cop at the end. And he's watching it, seeing as, like, you know, this is, you know, I'm not the one who's doing, but this is still the thing that I didn't want to happen. You know, I didn't want this cop who's just doing their job to get killed. Obviously, you know, Ilsa blows that guy's head off. She's really weird about that. She shoots a lot of people in the head in this movie.
Sure
but
does, yeah.
Got to make sure people are dead.
I really do like that scene. Like, that's true.
She'll shoot a cop. She don't care.
Yeah. John Mark's, like, scalp was on the ceiling, dude. It had to have been. She blasted him.
Oh yeah,
all the way away.
Sure did.
Well, I'm sorry, the Mark decoy, but yeah, that's my best scene. I love it.
That was a good one.
There's just a lot in this movie. Like, it's just very, very good.
Yeah.
All right, Cole. So, did you find anything on the award side?
No major awards. It did get a Best Sound nomination at BAFTA, which is, I mean, that's pretty good as far as, like, getting a technical award. You know, I am surprised that none of these have gotten any sort of Oscar love as far as, like, visuals or any of that thing. I know it's mostly because it's, you know, it's not, that's not really the point, but it is curious because a lot of the stunts and stuff are super cool, so it is always weird to me.
This certainly felt like the one that also would have, you know, gotten something. This is around the time that they got to be a bit more inclusive of movies like this getting some kind of recognition. It's just,
definitely,
like you said, the camera work in this one was like, even like the cinematography in a way in this one is probably
awesome.
The best. Granted, they got to use a lot of very interesting locations and stuff.
Yep. Yep.
But, you know, the camera work and everything in this one is really good. But, you know,
also
like,
just
so
surprised, like, no Best Picture nomination, like, truly. I mean, I know 2019... that Oscar season was fucking crazy, but yeah, this movie ruled. So
Big time. All right, so trivia-wise, I already mentioned mine, but Cruise trained for a year for the Halo jump, and then the bathroom fight shot was actually shot over a couple of weeks. Did y'all find anything?
I didn't have much. A lot of that sort of stuff I did see, but you got the good ones.
Yeah, nothing. This tanked that Justice League movie. This is why that movie looks like shit. And Henry Cavill's face looks weird because he had his Mission Impossible mustache and he couldn't shave it off. And he's like, sorry, Superman, they're going to have to CGI your face. So I don't know if that's trivia. That's just a funny thing. Like, he made the right choice, I think. You know, he stuck to his guns on the right movie. But it's always funny that him not shaving the mustache just blew that whole movie apart on the low.
But also, why can't Superman have a mustache, you know?
Yeah, he was dead. They brought him back to life.
Why not? Like, seriously.
You know, it grew while he was dead.
They say your hair continues to grow after you die. So.
And who's going to say something play to for him the about Yankees. Him? He's Superman. Hair.
Superman,
you should really shave. Who's going to be the dweeb
in
that
some
says
cultures,
that?
Some cultures, they only eat vomit.
Yeah, do your thing, Superman. Grow the mustache. We don't care. All right, gang, you can go catch Mission Impossible Fallout on Paramount, just like the other Mission Impossibles are before the opening of Dead Reckoning. But now we are back to Chris's pick, and we're out of Mission Impossible. So, Chris, what do we have on deck for us?
So, we're going with the theme. We meant to start this one before I led us down the path to do every Mission Impossible movie. So, we're going with bad movies that we love. Mine is a little recent, mainly because it's going to be pretty easy to find. We're going to go to Netflix. We're going to watch Dracula Untold. Movie is so bad, but I love it so much. Oh, dude, it's so awesome, but it's so awful at the same time. It's the coolest piece of shit movie I've ever seen. Wow, the vibes are immaculate. Oh.
Yeah, I haven't seen
You did
this.
The right thing avoiding it, I will say.
Yeah. Cool. I'm in.
Let's go. Yeah, so for everybody, that is the thing we're going with is bad movies that we love. So get ready for that. But first, go check out Mission Impossible Fallout on Paramount. And then we're going to go to Netflix. 2014, Dracula Untold. I'm hyped. So for all of us here at the stream team.
I like it, Chris. I like it.
Yeah, we're hyped. We're hyped. Let's go. All of us here at the stream team. Keith Evans, Co-Miller, Chris Lowry. Hey, it looks like you lost your oxygen.